Okay, so welcome to our latest podcast, which is effectively What's Hot in Payments in the US. I'm very pleased to be joined by Eric, who was on the last two podcasts with me. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Bob.
So the last time we discussed the US and, you know, why it's different to most countries around the world, and, you know, from a payments point of view, we discussed it has the scale, it has the maturity, it is by far and away the largest payments arena. It is, you know, the dollar is used just all over the world, and it has a very pivotal place. However, what we're going to discuss today is more about what's hot, what's going to happen, what's just around the corner, what's going to be happening next in the US. And, you know, as I see it, it kind of feels to me like we're in, you know, a slightly different place than we've been. I've been, you know, to and fro to America for, you know, 30 odd years. And I, in my view, while there's a lot of technology companies and a lot of exciting things that are coming out of the US and a lot of things that have been led by the US, it feels like it's been a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. But now, all of a sudden, it feels like the US is, you know, I wouldn't say waking up, but it's like starting to flex its muscles, if you will. We see crypto, and a lot of that is you know, is coming out of the US. We see, you know, crypto tied to the dollar, because it mostly is tied to the, you know, to the dollar. And that's maybe mainstream for the wrong reasons right now. And perhaps we can get into some of those points. Yeah, we're seeing, you know, it's probably got the wrong type of PR. If there's a wrong type of PR, I'm not sure. But we're seeing FedNow, and we're seeing the, you know, really increase and change of immediate payments, and the, you know, what is the consequences of that, I would see it. We're also seeing acceptance in of a different way of bill pay, and how pay by link is mm-hmm. changing. I'll send you a link, and, you know, we do the things in the background to make sure the payment goes through. And something that I was reading the other day, and it'd be interesting for your point of view on this, but checks and cash are in decline for the first time in the US, which, wow, that's kind of an interesting place to be. But it does feel, Eric, as if times are changing here. It's not just the Silicon Valley, you know, tech companies. There is something, you know, more systemic here going on.
Yeah, I think we have incremental enhancement innovation, if you will. I hesitate sometimes to use the word innovation here because in the US, there are well-established competitive payment systems serving almost every sector. And they work reasonably well. They have network critical mass. They're habit for consumers, businesses, and banks. And generally in the payments world, where something works reasonably well, you know, is ubiquitous, has scale, is habit, it's very hard to displace. And if you want to displace it with something new, you have to be, there has to be some compelling problem you're addressing. You have to be, you know, you can't be like 10% better than the incumbent. You have to be an order of magnitude better. And that's very hard, I think, in the US market, because the systems consumers have, you know, digital wallets and leather wallets chock full of payment products. They've got bill payment, they've got credit cards, they've got debit cards, they've got prepaid cards, they've got electronic bill payment. They may or may not still be using physical cash. They can write checks, paper checks, if they want, to your point. And there are P2P, electronic P2P systems, and there are multiple. We have Cash App, Square's Cash App, Zelle, PayPal, Venmo, all of which have scale, Apple Cash. And consumers and businesses take these all for granted. Yes, I think it is getting better. We see it getting in some instances faster. We see the adoption of electronic payments expanding around the edges. So ever more, you know, smaller merchants participating. I think, you know, we see consumers and merchants, more and more parties on both ends, both sending and receiving payments, electronic payments. I think that's great. But this is incremental change. We see, you know, non-traditional players we wouldn't say are payments companies, but, you know, the tech platforms, all of whom use payments, monetize in different way payments, have ambitions in payments, in some cases want to use payments to make themselves the primary dashboard for consumers. So certainly that's, you know, part of Apple Pay's thinking, Google Pay. But unlike, let's say, in China and some other markets, the non-payments players are relying upon existing payment networks, existing payment processors, and in almost all cases, licensed banks, rather than building that themselves, because they exist. And, you know, if the U.S. was, I don't know, Kenya or Tanzania or a different market, there might be a different path. You know, that's how, you know, at a high level, I see the state of play right now. And, you know, there's certainly leading or much hyped, I should say, innovation, experimentation in cryptocurrencies. So, you know, huge amount of capital is flowing in, a lot of excitement. But the reality is, and there were 8,000 or 9,000 cryptocurrencies issued. That number may be low or high today, but huge number. But in terms of mainstream payments use cases, I'm hard pressed to see any where crypto is or has been compelling or even useful.
And I think that's spot on. There's a lot of, you know, do you want to be inside a society or outside a society? It's a bit like, you know, do you want to take the red pill or the blue pill? But, you know, and, you know, we can maybe explore that a little bit. But I think it's true from a consumer side of things. It's never been as easy. You know, I mean, you know, most people have got a digital wallet in the pocket. You know, it's a phone. So consumers have got more and more options, and it's easier for them to make these payments, to the point that in many cases, they don't, you know, the difference between making a payment and buying something is very blurred. I mean, the truth of the matter is very few people wake up and say they want to pay for something. They may want to buy a cup of coffee, but nobody wakes up and says, I want to make a payment. Yeah. So on the consumer side, I think it's, you know, it's pretty easy now. There are so many ways, you know, to pay.
Yes, I would add one qualifier, and that qualifier is probably, resonates more for the U.S. market than in the U.K. or many other markets. And that is that many of consumers have payment preferences. So they don't wake up saying they want to make a payment. They want to buy something. They want to buy a service. But consumers have payment preferences. So they may decide they want to use, their Citibank, you know, MasterCard. They may decide they want to use a credit card, may decide they want to use a debit card. They have something that in that electronic or digital wallet they prefer to use. And there's a package of incentives. So they may be getting a pretty rich reward package, cash back, frequent flyer miles. They may have a fee-free product. And that is part of the ecosystem. The use of credit cards, which are relatively expensive for merchants, has credit cards growth over many of the recent years has surpassed debit card growth in the market, because for consumers who have payment preferences, the value proposition is often superior. You get a free grace period, you're getting rewards, you have a variety of protections. So, consumers have a surfeit of options, and they don't think about them. They take them for granted.
And I think that it's interesting to me, we've chatted about this before, you know, the cards market has been so preeminent around the world and obviously, you know, within the US, but now you see, some of the immediate payment options, and from a consumer's point of view, whether it's in a wallet and it goes through, you know, FedNow or Zelle, or it gets routed through the cards, you know, market, is like, I'm not sure I care. You know, if I get better protection or loyalty, as you say, or, you know, flyer miles or whatever it is, then I'll use A, B, C, or D. But in terms of plumbing and the base infrastructure, it feels like having immediate payments in a ubiquitous way in the US will start to usurp that, no?
I don't think so. I push back on that. So yeah, I think immediate or instant interbank payments will be, and in some respects already are, ubiquitously available. But immediate payment systems like RTP are not retail systems. There's no retail acceptance network. They're interbank payment systems. You touched on, you know, and there are differences between if they were to incur, or somebody were to use them and incur the cost of then building a retail acceptance network, which one can do clearly. I think of pay by bank in the UK, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. was been in the market for a long time and has been by almost any measure a failure. But that's real time. And it leverages the merchant acquiring industry to provide retail acceptance. But from a consumer standpoint and from a merchant standpoint, it wasn't perceived as better. So, I think instant payment systems, there are use cases where the app that are very compelling are very interesting. Instant payments for merchants to be paid for credit card sales, which are already in the market. Those are quite successful, quite popular. Instant payments for, you know, paying insurance claims, instant payments for, you know, same day payroll, instant payment systems being leveraged for money transfer. Instant payments, I think there'll be some interesting use cases that may evolve where instant payment systems are used to fund digital wallets. So if I'm PayPal, I'm Amazon, I'm Apple, I provide an option for consumers to fund the digital wallet with a credit or debit card, but I've got a brand, I've got a relationship, I might want to offer them some incentive to fund with an instant payment. But in terms of spontaneous retail transactions, I think the instant payment systems, they aren't fit for purpose as currently designed. So we're certainly seeing enormous growth in the use of these systems. And in those, I include, and I put cards in quotes, quote unquote, the card instant credit push systems, you know, Visa Direct and MasterCard set as examples, which for many use cases are better because there's more reach, more network reach. But, you know, I think one always has to look, okay, how am I benefiting? How do I perceive I'm benefiting? If I'm buying a Mercedes-Benz for $120,000, one can imagine that's a transaction in which I'm willing to use an instant payment system, or a wire or an ACH. And the dealer, auto dealer, is highly motivated. But if I'm buying a piece of consumer electronics, I'm paying for a hotel, I'm paying for dinner, I'm buying an airline ticket, incenting Joe or Sally Sixpack to participate in an instant payment, you know, credit push with no repudiation, no protection, no rewards, that's hard, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's true. I think there are, you know, around the world, there are certainly different pushes to do this, but I think in the US, it's not quite the same. So I think, from a consumer's point of view, they might use some of these things, or they might benefit from, you know, insurance companies or, you know, government bodies sending money out. But it, you know, feels like what they've got right now in terms of cards, shall we say, is probably good enough. And I don't see it being usurped by immediate payments in the way that it might do another parts of the world.
Yeah, I think it markets are different. The economics of the different players are different.
Yeah.
And you know, the Brazil case, Pix is instant payments. It's you know, the greatest number of transactions are P2P payments, but it's also being used for retail, particularly mm-hmm. with small retailers. It's being used for B2B. There the central bank, you know, is explicitly competing with retail systems, P2P yeah. systems. Yeah. You know, the Brazilian market is different. The mandate of the license that the Brazilian central bank has is different. You know, the India market, very, very different. UPI has been used, as enabling, of a whole range of other, of alternate payment systems, MobiQuick, Paytm, PhonePe, is enormously successful, widely used in bill payment, P2P payments, but it's a different market.
I agree with you. I think when around the world where there's been, I mean, you know, we listened to the Pix conversation when we were in Chicago, and you know, great work, but it had a mandate.
Yes, it had a mandate, and moreover, the central bank had the prerogative to do it. And the central bank mandated that all the major payment service providers participate. Right. So if I want to build a new system, it's an awfully big advantage if I can mandate that everyone I need to participate, which, you know, if I come along and I've got the next better mousetrap, and I'm going to build this new wonderful instant payment system. And of course it has more value if everybody's participating in it. And yeah. if I can mandate to participate, it's a lot easier to get there.
Yeah, it's a lot quicker to do it that way. Okay, well, let's switch gears a second, because I think that's, you know, that about, you know, sums it up for me in the US on the consumer side. On the corporate side, it kind of feels a little bit different. I mean, you know, if you speak to a treasurer, you know, there is, you know, they are looking for different things. They are looking to have more integration. They're looking for, let's frame it as digitalization of payments rather than the somewhat analog space. We know that you've, in the US, you probably have the most enormously efficient check processing system. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowingly efficient. On the other hand, it is effectively analog. We do see that there is a much of a push or a pull to look at having the digital interfaces that you can have with the more modern technologies. And that seems to be something that's coming from the treasurers, who are the, you know, corporate clients of banks. Do you see that changing soon?
Yeah, so I think change in corporate payments in the U.S., it's very slow, because everybody has systems that are working in some fashion, and they're not ideal. There may be, you know, a hodgepodge of legacy systems, manual pieces, electronic pieces, paper checks. You know, the check use has declined enormously. There's still billions written, but check use in the U.S. peaked back in 1995. And it was,
I didn't know that. Wow. Okay.
And it's been declining every year since, but declining faster with consumers than with businesses. And so the value of checks has been going up because there are more businesses that keep writing checks. They continue to decline, and they will continue to decline. You know, the ACH system, you know, one can say, well, maybe it should be faster. It's their batch, their same day batch, their next day batch. You know, every large company and small business in the country uses the ACA system for all manner of payments, for payroll, for bill payment. It works. It's, you know, is it perfect? No, but it has scale. It has ubiquity within the banking world. But, you know, we see, you know, innovation in terms of greater integration of whatever the payments is into the operating system of businesses. And I think that continues. Mm-hmm. And we see that pushing down to ever smaller businesses. We see businesses using a broader mix of payment systems. So using using ACH, using real-time credit push, maybe phasing out paper checks, using virtual cards to make accounts payable a revenue generator rather than a cost, using corporate cards. But this is incremental. It's not revolutionary. I mean, there's nothing to cause, you know, a really rapid change. It's just, you know, step by step. Expectations, I think, of what's available, you know, continue to increase for businesses. So I guess I see those trends continuing.
And you see, I mean, you know, we've talked in the past quite a bit about crypto. I don't see the corporate world touching it with a barge pole. Is that a fair view?
I violently agree. I think the only cases, and I hear there are a number of banks which have been experimenting with stable coins, which I don't put in the same bucket as crypto. But even there, the existing payment rails systems that businesses can use directly or through banks are digital. So one could argue that, you know, transmitting a token to make a payment, we have the payment and the settlement is the same thing. So maybe that's more efficient. But how much do I really care as a bank and as a business user? You know, if we have a couple journal entries that are made, they're electronic and they're instant or near instant, and the funds are transferred. I'm not sure I care. It's very hard for, you know, the new entrant to displace when the existing system is working, you know, reasonably satisfactorily.
I think that's spot on. I think one of the issues that, you know, is not just a view from the US, it's a view around the world. You know, digitalization is important. You can see, you know, the extra data that you can get from here, the new business models you can get. But in fact, if the company behind it is effectively an analog company and, you know, it can't react to an immediate payment or the immediate data, then what we would universally call, you know, open banking, open finance becomes somewhat of a mute point. So I can do the payment really quickly. Great. Thanks for permission deed. But I can't do much else with it inside of my business. And I think that is the journey that digitalization of payments will slowly start to affect the US marketplace. But you need the inside of the company to be able to work digitally as well for it to be useful.
Yes. And there, I think we see the opportunity is with that payment, instant payment, integrated, embedded in the software, in the systems that those businesses are using to run their business, they're an opportunity, right? That the integration is seamless, it's instant, and every company, large and small, has some sort of, you know, set of operating systems that it's using to support its business.
Yeah.
And payment systems need to be integrated into those. And clearly for most large businesses, they already are to a large degree. But that integration, the embedding, and the rapidity with which the payment, the expectation of how fast I can be paid, I think, you know, that is continues to ratchet up. That now, you know, the expectation by both businesses and consumers of what is an acceptable speed continues to be faster and faster.
I think that's right. But I mean, you know, much beyond, you know, 13 seconds versus the same day, you know, for most companies, that's about as much as they can do anyway, isn't it really? So, but let's sort of change the themes a little bit, because I have seen an awful lot now of bill pay in the US. Bill pay is absolutely huge, much larger than it is everywhere else in the world.
Yep.
And as a process, it is its own thing. Whereas if you went to France and you started to talk about bill pay, they'd kind of look at you and go, what are you talking about? Where, you know, you see, you know, other terminologies, pay by link, You know, you're sending link and then you, you know, you click on it and you pay. That type of technology is growing rapidly, and the US is rife for that change, isn't it?
Absolutely. And those systems they almost seem invisible because they're supporting various, you know, they're supporting billing systems that merchants are using. They're supporting billing systems that banks are using. And then consumers are accessing by a link, or they're accessing by an email with a link to pay. They go to a bill payment site on their bank, and they have maybe, you know, pre-designated, billers that they're going to pay. Those systems have been the first of those. Visa and MasterCard had bill payment systems back in the late 80s, early 90s, which were unsuccessful. I mean, theoretically, they were in a great position. One would have thought to do that. The first electronic bill payment system to scale and become actually the pioneer was CheckFree, which was founded by a guy named Pete Kite, who ran a set of fitness centers and was an editor of Muscle magazine. and he had a problem with bill payment billing members of the fitness clubs. So he built CheckFree, which was later acquired by Fiserv. But today, you know, Fiserv has a huge electronic bill payment and presentment business. FIS has one. There's Paymentus. ACI Worldwide has one. And they're all growing, and they all deliver their services through third party, you know, businesses, utilities, phone companies, merchants, banks, and most of them support a range of bill payments, where the payments may be actually delivered over ACH, they may be card based. They may in the future increasingly be, you know, instant credit push payments, but they're a mix. And billers have a mix of, they want to make the process more efficient. They want to get paid. Some look at these systems as providing also a platform over which they can market to consumers. There's a level of engagement in bill payment that's recurring.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's my personal view that I think FedNow, with its effective, you know, ubiquity, or, you know, in terms of certainly from reach, I think that'll maybe change the back end side of that. And certainly my company believes that's a huge opportunity. But let me just come to the last bit, really, because I think, you know, we talked in the last podcast, we talked about the US from a regulatory point of view. You know, at the very end of it, you were talking about some of the changes that are happening, but we've seen quite definitive statements in a way that perhaps we haven't seen before. Effectively, you know, the Fed is saying, hey, look, you know, crypto is an asset class, it's not a payment. You know, which is, you know, it is a huge statement in its own right. We are seeing, albeit it's taken an awful long time for things like FedNow to come out with its reach. I listened to the, you know, the PICS, you know, presentation, and I saw the lights of the Fed when the guy was, you know, talking about a mandate.
Yes.
I mean, you just could see them going, oh my, can we do this? You know,
they'd love to have that authority.
What's the regulatory mood now? It's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's changing. And I think we're likely to get some clarifying stablecoin legislation I worry a little bit that there'll be a rush out of the Sam Bankman-Fried FTX Alameda scandal. Embezzlement or alleged embezzlement, to that it'll be overly prescriptive, and that would be bad. But the good news is, you know, if there's clarifying legal regimen and regulation, that would be helpful for the development for innovation in that space. I think it is, in terms of the Fed in payments. There's a lot of lobbying by banks, by process agents over its amendment. Kind of almost inside ball. And then there may be some tweaks, but it's not a fundamental change in the regulatory regime. I think with the closely divided Congress, I don't think we're going to see any big legislative change, enabling different regulation. You touched on FedNow and how and its ubiquity. Fed is pricing aggressively when it launches FedNow. So small banks for the first 2,500 transactions a month aren't going to pay. It'll be fee free initially. The Fed is priced at 4.5 cents per credit push. Above that, and for large banks, obviously, which is the same as the price as TCH's RTP. But the marginal cost for all these transactions is zero for everybody. And if we get if price becomes the basis of building reach, price could come down to zero for some period of time. If I'm building my network, and as I my understanding is I need a critical mass of institutions participating in my network and using it for it to have value. Well, maybe it's in my interest to provide, a financial incentive and say I'll price at zero for some period. So I think, that's a introduces or may introduce a different dynamic. What else? I mean, I guess it's an exciting time to be in payments. I would like maybe a little lighter regulatory touch in the market. I'm not sanguine on that front. I think if anything, the trends are going to be in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think I live in a country where it's a bit, it's a bit different, and we've talked a lot about Europe and certain other countries. They will mandate changes and force things through.
Yep.
I did think that it was quite telling that the Fed really liked the PIC story, and I'm sure they'd like to try and get some of that going. But I think pricing will start to make change happen, and I think it won't be long before people work out, if it's free or near free, what else could I do with it? I think that'll start to, that'll be the regime that'll start. But of course, you need the infrastructure in place for that next level of change to happen, I think.
Well, imagine, I'm sitting in Amazon, or I'm sitting at PayPal, or I'm sitting at an instant platform which is using payments. And let's imagine that I'm using credit cards principally and or debit cards to fund, And so the consumer, I've done that because that's easy for the consumer. Well, if I'm at Amazon, I can go to Joe and Sally Sixpack, and I could say, I'll give you X discount if you authorize, funding using, instant credit push. Now, a coffee shop can't do that. I won't be doing that. But a big platform, a trusted platform, has the means and the tools perhaps to incent. And there'll be other use cases. I think, there'll be use cases that surprise us.
I think that's true. I think the loyalty piece, is the quid pro quo. If you move and the value of your loyalty or the additional services that I can get direct to you and me and cut out the fee, the interchange fee or the card fee, whichever you look at it, I think that's going to be very rich pickings for very large players, the Walgreens, the Amazons of the world. I think that will be fascinating to see how that comes. But Eric, let me try and pull a few of these things together. It feels to me as if change is afoot. Some of these things we'll have to wait and see how they come. I think a lot of the systems that are in place are really very good. So it's, as you said at the beginning, it, you know, it's going to be not just a 5% change, it's got to be a much larger change to make it through. And I think the digitalization story will take some time. I do feel that FedNow might be a pivotal infrastructure as opposed to a pivotal payment system, if you see what I mean. I think it'll provide benefits that we don't see just yet. And I think that's probably the hot space. I think that we're pretty much of a mood that crypto is interesting and we need to watch it, but it's either the blue pill or the red pill, and I can't remember which way around it is.
You know, I agree with that. I have an additional observation on FedNow and comparison with some other markets. So I think in many markets, instant payments, interbank payments infrastructure has been looked at as a utility and a market-wide, you know, national infrastructure. And the assumption is there's a right answer, and there's a certain efficiency in having one platform provider. Mm-hmm. And in the US, when FedNow launches, we'll have FedNow, we'll have, you know, RTP, but then we'll also have the handful of other, you know, Visa Direct, yeah, MasterCard, Send, Zelle, RealNet, Discover, or Deliver, and Pop Money. And I think competition between these different interbank instant payment systems is going to produce, you know, use cases, value that nobody really can see, expects. So on the face of it, you think, look at this and say, well, geez, we got more than half a dozen different systems, which in different ways are doing the same thing. Isn't that inefficient? Well, maybe it's inefficient, but competition between these systems is going to discover, you know, new compelling use cases and make them all better.
Yeah, I think that's right. I genuinely think that's right, especially for the US marketplace with its scale and reach. But look, you know, you made a statement before, and I think it's true, that's a super exciting time to be in the payments business. And as ever, as I claw to the, you know, come to the close, Eric, thank you so very much for your conversation and your insight. And we'll watch and see just, you know, how accurate we are with these views.
Fun days ahead.
Yeah, indeed. Fun days ahead, indeed. Thanks, Eric. Thanks so very much.
Thanks. Have a good one.